es el rey del huepaje. Hue, 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 huepa, es el grito del rey. Ya llegó usted, es el rey del huepaje. Hue, 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 huepa, es el grito del rey. Esta es la dinastía, es el sonido Kiss. Del barrio de Tlaxcala, nacido en San Luis. Esta es la dinastía, es el sonido Kiss. Del barrio de Tlaxcala, nacido en San Luis. Ya llegó usted, es el rey del huepaje. Hue, 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 huepa, es el grito del rey. Ya llegó pa' usted, es el rey del huepaje. Hue, 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 huepa, es el grito del rey.
WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Harborough.
Están escuchando 103.5 FM WCOMLP, Chapel Hill y
Carborough. Good afternoon. This is the International League for Peace and Freedom show, otherwise known as Connect the Dots, Wake Up Call. And we're going to start you out with a little music from a recent visitor here, Dave Lippman. And this is about a very current issue, which is most of the kind of music that he writes for himself and for us to enjoy. And it's called Citizens United.
How much is that giant ship in the window? The one with the balancing scale. How much is that giant ship in the window? I do hope that giant ship's for sale. I believe all corporations were created as a prequel to the leadership of those too big to fail. And when we have alighted in the Congress and been knighted, not that we were invited, and our love is not requited, to make up for that we call ourselves Citizens United. They say dollars and democracy don't mix, one swallows the other. Guess which? I'm accused of gaming the system. That's just blaming the victimizer. Cause money is speech, oh yes, lots of it. A vote is fine, but money is above it. Buying elections, you gotta love it. Money works every time and it's no crime. Not now. Don't donate to a candidate, that'd be too brash. The Chamber of Commerce will redeploy your cash. Make creative use of intermediaries. Launder your cash to keep elections clean. A rising tide lifts all votes, some a little higher so they stay afloat. Every politician has his or her price. Who's to decide if that is or isn't nice? I'm an innovator, I'm on the cutting edge. If things need improving, I just buy a new legislature. A rose by any nomenclature is still a rose, it's just the rose I impose. Don't be shy with the corporate cash. Democracy's a billion-dollar bash. Though they say corporate government is fast, isn't that can't happen here. Maybe in Germany or Italy, but never here at home, where the people all have healthcare and the buffalo still roam. Yeah, the sky's the limit. My guy's gonna win it. Power, he'll be at its hub. To prepare for his election, he's putting in his hours at the country club. If you miss me at the voting booth, you can't find me there. Come on over to that agency, I'll be buying it there. Oh brother, I'll be buying it there. I'll be buying it there.
And we're back on the air. This is Dick Paddock with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I'm co-host and engineer today, and Lori Hoyt is the other co-host. Good afternoon, Lori.
Good afternoon, Dick, and thank you for starting us off with one of our favorite activist comedian, musicians, Dave Lippmann.
And former neighbor. He used to live here.
Yes.
He lived here for like on the order of 10 years, I think.
Yes, he did a long time. And then the big city, the Big Apple, captured him away from us. But he came back to visit. I'm sure he'll be back many times, we hope and pray. We're happy to be here today. A lot going on. And I want to start off with something that is on the arts, which we do pay attention to, even though we mostly talk politics, but we are very interested in the arts. And in today's Chapel Hill paper, it tells about two shows, one theme. It's right on the front page. And it says the first one is going to be late last year, Joseph Magel, director of UNC's Process Series, was helping Kaune Smego and Will McInerney of the Sacrificial Poets create a theatrical adaptation of their poetic Portraits of Revolution, unquote, a collection of poems and first-person accounts that they compiled on visits to Egypt and Tunisia during the Arab Spring Revolution the past year. And then the one it's being paired with is South African playwright Atol Fugard, let's play Blood Knot. So these are going to be playing throughout the March at the Art Center, and they both productions explore oppression, injustice, and I think it's really, really exciting. And I'm especially excited about Poetic Portraits of Revolution. The Sacrificial Poets is one of our most exciting and favorite groups here in Chapel Hill. That they work with young people. They are so talented, and it's going to be thrilling. I think we ought to get a whole group of us to go to that, Dick. So I just wanted to let people know, call the Art Center. The first one is starting, the Poetic Portraits of a Revolution is starting. That'll be on March 2nd starting and up through the 11th. And then the Blood Knot, which is a classic from the South African playwright Atol Fugard, starts on March 4th and up through the 20th. So there'll be many, many opportunities, and we recommend them strongly. We're happy that that our friend Miriam Thompson has just come in with some news that just came out.
I want to jump in with
a
little plug here about the Sacrificial Poets.
Yes.
First of all, until I heard the Sacrificial Poets, I just didn't get poetry. But now I get poetry to the point where I go regularly to the presentation at Flyleaf Books, which they hold every month on what they call First Wednesday. And they have poets come, many of them who wrote their particular poem that they're presenting specially for the event, but others bring poetry that they have had for other reasons. But whatever, they have individual poets coming to present their own poetry. And
so that'll be next Wednesday, will be the first Wednesday, because today's the 29th, right?
That's right.
So next Wednesday, folks.
Next Wednesday
If you haven't heard them, or if you're a poetry lover, or all of the above, what is it, at 7 o'clock?
It's at 7 o'clock
at Flyleaf Books. Okay, Dick, thank you for that. Miriam, I'm glad you're able to come. And we've a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to be doing some updates on fracking and a little update on the huge controversy in our own community on charter schools, a for-profit charter school. So should we start? Now, you have do we want to start with the fracking? You have is that something that's Sammy Slater, alderman? I have trouble speaking, right?
No, I'm just going to cough into the mic, but so everybody cover their mouth.
No, I
I know.
Cover their ears.
I know you've had some laryngitis, yeah. So that's why I was.
Yes, everybody put on their germ masks.
Right. Yes. So it doesn't come through the radio.
So maybe we'll start off with that.
Start off with the fracking, and then we can.
I have another comment to make about the fracking.
Why don't you start?
If you don't mind, just a short note, and that is.
I do mind, but you can go ahead anyway.
a few days ago in Common Dreams, there was an article that stated that a second judge in New York State had ruled that it was okay for local towns, municipalities, and maybe counties, I'm not sure about whether counties are included, had the power to basically, on the level of zoning, say, no, you can't do any fracking here. Now, the deal is that...
That's what we're about to talk about, right. About municipalities taking a vote, yes.
Right, and it's just an example of... And it may be somewhat different, but it wouldn't surprise me that, in fact, that would be the case in North Carolina. But the idea is that the state regulates how you go about fracking, but the locality can determine whether or not fracking is allowed, period.
And that's what we're about to get an update about. When we had our WILF steering committee meeting on Saturday, we found out and got the idea that in Pittsburgh, Chatham County, where you're from, Dick, that you're working on presenting to your local municipality about having a ban on fracking because Chatham County is in the gun sight of the fracking companies or whatever they are. And what we found out, to my great surprise, one of the first municipalities in North Carolina, Creedmoor, has already passed a ban on fracking within its borders, and Butner is about to. So we said, boy, oh boy, we better get started with Chapel Hill, Carborough, as well as Pittsburgh, and friends in other municipalities, and get working on that. So you've got a copy of
We're going to have it on the WILF website. Dick, can we get it up on the WILF website? Get Sammy's resolution on the WILF website? I just sent it out to the WILF list, but let me give you the date so everybody has, as Lori always says, get your pens, pencils, feather pens, whatever.
We can ask. I'll have to. What we need to do is Lucy's in charge of. She's the pass through.
She's out of town.
She's out of town?
Yeah, so someone else needs to get it on the website.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. See if I can get a hold of Jackie.
Okay.
Because I need to get in touch with her.
Yeah, this is really an extraordinary resolution. It's patterned after the one that Laura and Dick were talking about earlier in Pittsburgh. It's similar to the one that we're going to introduce in Chapel Hill. Durham is introducing it. We're trying to get it out to Raleigh. But it's really going all over the state. And I'm glad you mentioned the other towns that are not, considered the...
Ahead of us.
Ahead of us.
Yes.
But this is going... It's next Tuesday. Definitely next Tuesday, 7 p.m.
That's what, March 6th,
March 6th, Durham Town Hall on Main Street.
Oh, that's in Durham on Tuesday.
Did I say that? Carborough.
Oh, that's...
On Main Street in Carborough.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. Durham is passing their own.
Carborough.
But this is going to be Carborough, March 6th, 7 p.m. They do not expect they expect it to pass. But it is really important to pack the place because it sends a message that we are not going to tolerate fracking in our town. So let me just read a couple of the key sections.
Okay.
Whereas hydraulic fracturing or fracking is a method of extracting natural gas that involves injecting at an extremely high pressure a mixture of water, sand, and a cocktail of proprietary and unknown toxic chemicals to break up shale or other rock formations otherwise impermeable to the flow of gas, and whereas North Carolina, underscore this, does not currently allow either horizontal drilling or hydraulic fracturing, and the current North Carolina study of in-state shale gas resources is being undertaken without adequate funding and with insufficient time, and by the way, the effort of the House in our illustrious state legislature seeking to overturn the governor's veto, which would prevent fracking and give more attention to a research study. Whereas millions of gallons of fresh water are used to drill and to hydraulic fracture each shale gas well, and such development would exacerbate water shortages such as those that have stemmed from North Carolina's recent severe droughts. And whereas, I'm jumping ahead, Section 5 of the North Carolina Constitution states that it shall be the policy of this state to conserve and protect its lands and waters for the benefit of all its citizenries, and to this end it shall be a proper function of the state of North Carolina and its political subdivisions to control and limit the pollution of air and water, and in every other appropriate way to preserve as part of the common heritage of this state its forests, wetlands, estuaries, beaches, historic sites, open lands, and places of beauty. And so therefore, be it beautiful. Resolved. Isn't that incredible?
That is.
I mean, it's just one after another. It's a beautiful resolution. Great for public education.
Yes,
therefore, be it resolved, the town of Carrboro calls upon all other municipal and county governing bodies of North Carolina to pass similar resolutions to this one, and that the League of Municipalities and the Triangle J Council of Governments join in this effort. And there also there'll be a parallel, I think, a complementary ordinance that would prevent any trucks that, even though Carrboro may not be the site of any gas drilling, it's urging others like Chatham.
Well, and what we found out
but
Saturday,
they won't allow trucks going anywhere near Carrboro in carrying any equipment for gas drilling.
And what we found out Saturday, that Chapel Hill is part of that circle of places where there is shale. So at some corner of Chapel Hill, I'm sure it's a corner of Chapel Hill that's sort of south of here towards Chatham, could also be under the gun for fracking. And I'm glad you brought up about trucks, because that I don't think people are so worried about energy and worried about oil. I'm waiting and hoping for that worry to translate into a real political will for both much more conservation and also for wind and sun and tides,
right,
and this state
right.
is particularly favored that we could easily, with political will, get all of our energy needs met through these natural resources. But people, what they don't realize is that there's an enormous, 1,000 trucks per month or whatever for each.
I don't know what the volume is, but obviously, if there's going to be millions of gallons of
water,
slurry, water,
right,
cocktail,
right,
whatever it is, pumped down.
So the roads,
into the
ground, so with the money that you get in one way,
it's got to get here.
It's all that there's thousands of trucks going up and down the roads, tearing up the roads. So we then have to put out a lot more taxpayer money for roads. But the main thing you mentioned, and that is the most precious resource of all, more precious, believe it or not, than oil, and it will be more precious as time goes on, is water. And there's we want to get more information, but we found out on Saturday about a DVD about how the endocrine disruption that nobody really knows for sure the chemicals that they're using. But, we've heard about the hog lagoons. Then now there's going to be even worse than hog lagoons. It's going to be chemical lagoons. And they don't want to reveal the chemicals that they're using. And was it in Atlanta that if they would just let doctors know if somebody was getting sick who might have been exposed to it, if they would let the doctor know what the doctors know what the chemicals were, that as long as the doctors would sign that they would not reveal those chemicals publicly, which is absolutely incredible. It's very, very scary that they're holding on to that as such a trade secret. So water is the big, big concern along with the rest of it.
And also that in Ohio they're having earthquakes where there never was any earthquake activity within a few miles of where there's fracking. That's another concern. But water, I can't say that enough, is the big concern. And the other thing I found out, we found out Saturday at our meeting, is that this fracking push is going on in around the world.
And that
they don't care, because if they destroy the water, then they want to sell people privatized water. And so this could be money at both ends. So, you know, people like that have no conscience at all. They do not think about what's happening to water, what's happening to the planet, just as long as they make
their money. It's all about profit.
It's all about profit, and then the extra profit will be, okay, we've ruined your water, that's fine, we'll sell you water at $1 a bottle. So folks,
by the way, it has been documented that wastewater produced from hydraulic fracturing includes carcinogenic, corrosive, mm-hmm. and or toxic salt,
absolutely.
Metals, petrochemicals, and mm-hmm. radioactive elements. I'm glad you mentioned the whereas disposal, what you were just saying, fracturing wastewater by high-pressure underground injection can potentially cause seismic activity, mm-hmm. which is what happened in Ohio.
Seismic activity.
And whereas the Sharon Harris nuclear plant sits on the Jonesboro Fault, and Carver was located 30 miles away from Sharon Harris nuclear plant. So, I mean, we need to get on the boat on this one.
The price we would pay for a short-term boost in energy has unintended consequences. I think for those who make money, some of those consequences are intended. But for many of us, to get all the facts, and it does get complicated. So we're letting you know that the next big push, which I'm very hopeful about, especially since these judges are ruling that while the state can say how fracking is done or if it's allowed, that municipalities can say not within my borders. And if enough municipalities do that, well, we hope we can kind of put a red light on this whole process. So thank you for bringing, this is a beautiful resolution, so we're going to have to get
March
that.
6th.
March 6th, coming up.
Okay.
Yeah, next Tuesday. So is there anything else? I think that may be it for fracking.
Oh, one more thing. We are asking people to call their, we saw Senator Ellie Kinnaird. They will not be able to override the governor's veto in the Senate because they don't have enough numbers. I can't remember what the vote total is, but they have enough Democrats to make sure that a veto isn't overridden in the Senate. But in the House, as we have seen in the budget, a couple of renegade, what do they call them, blue dog, red dog Democrats or whatever, joining the Republicans could override the veto. So it's very important to make sure that our legislators stand up and be counted and be vigorous in their opposition to any effort to override the governor's veto.
Yes, because we don't need in this current culture, we do not need lukewarm Democrats. We need passionate, committed Democrats, and too often we don't need
what we need are people who are committed to representing the people, Democrats
yes.
or
that's
Republicans.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
And not corporations, because that's what this
and
is
not
all
the,
about.
And not the corporate interests, absolutely.
Yeah, you could put libertarians in there.
Yeah.
You could.
Libertarians.
Libertarians, yes.
Libertarians.
Yeah. I wish there were more libertarians.
Yes, I was just thinking that, too. The other issue that we want to go to is just a little bit of an update on the huge controversy in Chapel Hill Carborough, and that is, and it's been such a shock because it's come out of the blue, just kind of snuck up on us, or they snuck up on us, I'm not sure what, to have a charter school, a for-profit charter school, that has not really had a lot of community input. And I think that the people who are pushing for it got to realize that. And so they've had supposedly these two forums for the community that have, I think,
they sent out some kind of postcards, but it has not been well publicized.
It was sent out a few days before the event.
Mm-hmm.
Mention where it is, at the Mapleview Agricultural Center.
Which is way out in the country. It's beautiful. I always wanted to go there, and so I went to the event for the 4 o'clock session yesterday. And even though I sort of knew roughly where it was, I had to keep looking and did find it. And it seemed like a peculiar place if you're trying to get community input for the Chapel Hill Carborough schools to have it way out in the county. And lo and behold, there were only a couple, besides a few board members and some of us who are opposing it, who wanted to find out more and ask questions. There were, at the one I was at, I think there were maybe two parents who were possibly interested.
I went to the first one at 4 o'clock.
The week ago.
Thursday.
A week ago, Thursday. And there were a few board members, some people from the
National Heritage Academy.
I guess NHA, yeah.
Oh, yeah, National the staff Heritage was there Association. From NHA.
Right. Oh, and you were there, too, of course. And there were like seven or eight of us people who were against it.
And ready to ask questions.
And were
questions.
There any parents there?
Oh, there may have been three.
There was
maybe three.
Maybe three or possibly four.
And the same thing happened at 7 o'clock. There have been from two to three or so parents there that would have come other than those of us who really wanted to ask questions and then hand out literature to parents who might have shown up. So it was, but remember the cards, the postcards. I didn't bring a copy of the postcard, but it's very glitzy and pictures of little children's faces. And it was sent out a couple of days before the event, and it was mailed from NHA headquarters in Michigan.
And that was one of the...
So you know who's paying for all of this.
That was one of the points that I was trying to make. I'm not sure if that's my phone over there or not. I don't think so. But it's one of the points that I was trying to make to them. You know, I said... Oh, my. What? Is somebody trying to call us?
That would be...
Peggy.
Well, don't answer.
No, don't answer.
Don't answer. We're having a radio show, for goodness sake. So,
She might be calling about the resolution.
Well, but this is not a call-in show. So anyhow, where am I? I lost the track of thought with the phones.
Oh, the postcard and then.
Oh, yeah. One of the points I was trying to make them was three main points, I think, along with many others. One is, how in the world, where does the profit come from? How are they going to have a profit, you know, if they're going to really do what's right by children? And they didn't really answer that to me successfully, but they just went around that all that what they needed, NHA would provide it, that, you know. And the other point, though, is I said, you know, in the public schools, as we know it, if we're not happy with the school, we elect a school board, and we can go and diselect, you know, get new school board members in there if we're not happy with how the schools are doing. And I said, who elects your board? And they just had their group of dedicated professionals, which I'm sure, you know, the two who were there were really nice. And one of them I know is a teacher that I, she was in community and schools way back, and I, which is an innovative program in way, way back, and I like her very, very much. And I'm sure if people mean well, but I'm not sure if they're thinking through all the ramifications. And I said, you know, this is part of a nationwide trend to privatize the public schools, privatize prisons, and for corporations to make a profit. And that is the big sticking point, along with their board, however dedicated and nice they are not elected by the community at large. And it's the community at large who are the taxpayers. And I said, so this is some of the points that are really, really problematic.
You should know that they are reluctant. It isn't that they can't. They're reluctant to discuss where the profit comes from, because in the steps before the State Board of Ed, people should know the State Board of Ed will finally vote tomorrow. We're not sure where during the course of the day, but they will vote on the application. I don't know how many charter schools they're considering tomorrow, probably up to 9. We're one of them. But when the Public Charter School Advisory Council heard their application and they make a recommendation to the State Board of Ed, was also asked how they derive their profit. Now, the money follows the kids, but the real important thing is they will make a profit. They're not going into this without making a profit. So where will they skim to make a profit that makes this investment worthwhile? What will they pay their teachers, who, by the way, was not in, we'll get to the article in a minute, but the teachers are exempt. They don't have to be certified.
Okay, and in their answer yesterday, which I don't know how if that's accurate with the one here, but the principal from Raleigh, who was the main presenter, said that they paid comparable, that when you figured in the benefit package, he said, you know, a starting one might be making 10% less than a starting teacher here, but that the benefit package, and that was a little fuzzy how we talked about the benefit package, which might favor one family more than another. So if that also was not adequately addressed, and it was not any firm promise or commitment made about what teachers
would be paid
here.
I want to ask you something. When we asked that question about you know, the profit, and one of the NHA staff members answered.
Oh, you had an NHA staff member.
We had an NHA staff person, Dick, you were there, and who said, well, they invest $7 million. They get threw out a number of $7 million. I don't know. We were told by the way, someone, as the head of facilities planning in the district, there's no way that they can build enough of a property for $7 million. It costs really a lot more. But the point is this is what you heard, they don't make a profit for 4 years. Now, I want to ask you something.
For 4 years.
If you have investors that are putting up to, let's take their figure of $7 million, which is totally inadequate, you are not going to ask for some dividends on your investment. So obviously there is something. And remember, they own the property. If they buy the property, they will own it. Not us, not the board, the charter school, so-called, you know, kind board. And I also want to talk about you mentioned that these are probably decent people. And one of the things we said to them was, if you really cared about the children, where were you? Why didn't you show up at NAA meetings? Why didn't you show up at the school board? Why didn't you help us create an advocacy program for parents so, you know, they would be able to really navigate the school system in the best interest of their children. All of a sudden, last minute, without notifying, collaborating, commenting, or having any kind of conversations with the public, they open up a for-profit charter school.
So on Sunday's paper, they had an article, decision due this week, and you're saying it's tomorrow,
yep,
on the new charter school. And the school system, the Chapel Carborough City Schools, they oppose it because it would remove an estimated $4.5 million from the school system because the money does follow the child. And what I did ask, I thought it was just the state money followed the child, but it is both the county money, and if it's a child from the Chapel Hill, Carborough City, it would be this, because we do quite a hefty supplement to the state, and we are one of the better funded school districts in the state. So all of that would go and be sucked out of our public school system. But it did say here that Angela Lee, who I have not met, but it says that she was on the education committee of the chapter.
That was a misprint. She was never NAA. I mean, that's one of the things we can talk about, that we're urging people to write to the Chapel Hill News and the News and Observer.
It's a bad article.
There were really a lot of misstatements. That was
a misstatement.
That was not the worst. I have a feeling that if Angela said it, then it needs to be corrected.
But they may have just misunderstood.
Either that but people need to say she has never. I checked
She's
with the longtime president, Fred Battle, and she was never a a chair of the education committee of the NAACP. But more than that, Lori, one of the points we want people to talk about, because they didn't cover it, there was no collaboration or contact with the school district until shortly before the application was submitted. I think you said that yesterday.
Yeah, that was the point.
No, you know, they talk about how concerned they are about children. Then, in fact, why didn't they talk about the district about setting up some kind of program so that we could all work for kids who are underserved?
Well, that was the point I made to a woman from the board there that I liked very, very much. And I said, you know, I said, this is a community that really is an intelligent community. They discuss things a lot. And I said, there'd been nothing in the paper, no community discussion. And I said, you know, if this was like a year from now and the other part that bothers me, we have a brand new superintendent. Before he hardly gets into his office, then this crisis comes up with four. Already the state has cut what it's doing for education, and then to have another $4.5 million and to try to refigure your budget and how you're going to do what you need to do just seemed to be so bad, such a mean-spirited thing to do.
They also misrepresented the test scores. What does that mean?
Station break.
Station break.
Well, let me just finish my thought then.
Yes.
So I said, you know, if a year from now his heart seems in a good place, his smarts seem in a good place, and he has such wonderful ideas for improving the schools. And I said, if a year from now, if he was not following through on what he is saying he's going to do, then to be started, bring up a conversation about a charter school and have a community conversation. Do we need a charter school? Would this be a good way to go? And then you come up with a charter school, and if it was a not-for-profit one, I said, that would be a different story. But this, all of it, the timing of all of this, and that it is for-profit, is just so heartbreaking, so heartbreaking. So we're going to have a station break and try to repair our heart in the meantime, huh? Okay.
Yes. This is Dick Paddock for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, presenting our Wednesday afternoon weekly radio show called Wake Up Call. And we invite you to listen, of course, every week at this time. We're brought to you live on WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 over the air, or you can stream it live from your computer by going to the website of the station, which is wcomfm.org. And the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a website out there as well. We try to keep it updated with what's going on, and that website is at Triangle, TRIANGLE, WILPF for WILPF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, .org. And if you go to that website, there is a place called Radio that links you to our archive of shows that we've done since way back at the beginning, which was like 4 years ago now, it seems like. So we invite you to take advantage of that and to keep up to date with what the Women's International League is doing. We meet every month on the second Saturday from 10 to 12, and it's usually at... yes, it's usually the meeting is at the Friends Meeting House. On Raleigh Road, right near the campus of UNC, that is.
And did you want to say who our guest is going to be?
Yes, this coming meeting, monthly meeting, which is going to be on March 10th,
10 o'clock.
Which is a Saturday at 10 o'clock, we're going to have a special guest. A former resident of this area, Teresa Elamin, who is now located in Columbus, Georgia. And she is going, actually is at the UN in New York right now as a delegate of the U.S. section of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom to participate in the annual review meetings of the Commission on the Status of Women Conference. She will be coming back on March 3rd, and she will be here for a week to report back to the people in this area, in particular, of course, the Women's International League chapter, but also to the general public. There will be a presentation on March 8th, which is Thursday, at NCCU in the Student Union, starting at about 7 o'clock. She will be talking about the relationship of the Commission on the Status of Women, the fact that March 8th is International Women's Day. And so and she will probably be interacting with students and would like to have members of the community there as well. So it's in the Student Union, and there will be signs in the Student Union directing you to the location.
And we do want to mention that she is going to be on this radio show next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, which is March 7th.
March 7th, and then she will be at our WILF meeting, to which everybody is invited. And we hope that you will come, that maybe you'll listen in a little bit on the radio, and it'll whet your appetite to hear more and to meet Teresa Elamine. So we had a few more things. Is this time to play a little bit more music, do you think, as a part of?
Sure, if you like, I can do that.
I just want to finish with the letter, and then I have to leave it.
Okay.
Lori started mentioning there are two things people can do. Many of our listeners have been signing petitions online. The board, as we said earlier, will vote tomorrow on whether to accept or reject the charter school. You should know, by the way, that they have yet to identify a site. We didn't mention that it has to go through a permit process, so there will be actions for people to take around Chapel Hill, depending on where they seek to locate. There will be a requirement if they buy land, the town will have to issue a permit. So none of this can happen before they presumably are going to open in August.
They didn't have a site even as of yesterday, too. But the other thing that we found out that I just think really is so weird, they could pick a site out in the country outside of the Chapel Hill Carrboro city limits. But if kids from Chapel Hill, Carrboro go there,
the money follows the child.
Our money goes to them, even though it's going to be harder for parents to get there. So that is, so you have a Chapel Hill, Carrboro school that they're calling it a public school in money, Chapel Hill, Carrboro funds, but it could be God knows where, out in the boondocks someplace.
Well, it's they're treating it conceptually something like a Montessori school. In the sense that they put it wherever they can put it, and then they will attract students from wherever, because Montessori school is not a neighborhood school in any sense of the word.
Well, the wherever is really important because of the five schools in North Carolina, three are predominantly white and middle class. So that's how you know that why, you know, some of their scores that they allege, you know, their scores, first of all, they're no better than the Chapel Hill Carrboro School
District.
No,
they're not. They're
and
not.
The schools in which there's a predominant minority population has poorer scores than what's been happening in the Chapel Hill Carrboro
school. Well, I guess if a kid went there from wanted to go there from Raleigh, then the Raleigh money would follow that kid, even if it was in Orange County.
Wherever the child lives, the money follows the child.
That's very funny. I'm trying to wrap my mind around that.
It just takes money. What you have to wrap around is that it takes money out of our school budget.
Yes, that's
But the thing that people can do now, in addition to the petitions, I mean, tomorrow, whatever happens, this is an ongoing campaign. But what many of us are talking about is we need to really put our emphasis on As you said earlier, supporting our superintendent is supporting our elected school board, supporting our schools and giving the best education process possible, supporting equity in our public schools, and really continuing to fight that every child achieves academic excellence. So that's one. We're going to have a proactive door-to-door campaign supporting our public school. And the other thing is, I think people really have to get the Sunday paper and start writing, because it was, it's a complicated story, but she's had, I understand, since December, and we really need to write to the editor, Mark Schultz, to Caitlin Farrell, and urge that they do a really better story, a more thorough story. And among the things that she didn't do was to give a more a careful analysis of who NHA is.
Yes.
And their
who's,
you know,
on
their
board.
Huizinga, who's J.C. Huizinga.
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 Yeah.
H-U-I-Z-I-N-G-A.
Z-I-N-G-A
or Z-E-N-G-A, right.
And he
you can look him up. You can look up National Heritage Academies. You can look up J.C. Huizinga. You can see all his affiliations. It's like the Koch brothers and Americans for Prosperity.
Yes.
Well, there's something else regarding the public schools that he's associated with that is also supported by the Koch brothers. There was no such research in the magazine, in the Sunday edition. We need to make sure they do that. There was really no serious analysis of the kind of strides that our school district has made in reaching out to all children. There was no mention of the tainted process of this public charter school advisory committee, on which sits two NHA board members. I mean, if that isn't a conflict of interest.
Right.
I mean, they recommended the school and they sit on the board. So these are, they only spoke to it. She quoted a few parents instead of really doing a survey of parents of what's been happening in the schools. There were lots of omissions. And I think if people want a copy of some points, talking points to raise, plus telling their own stories, what we're really urging is people write letters with their own stories of what's happening to their children, what initiatives are being taken in the schools, what they're doing to advocate for their children in the public schools.
Right.
And they can call Wilf, right? They can call who?
I guess call you.
All right, 919-370-4114, and we'll be happy to email talking points that you can send to the
I'm
Chapel Hill
email,
News and the News and Observer.
To be
I'd be delighted to send you some of the stuff that parents, that Lori talked about earlier, that you raised, that we raised at previous forums.
Yeah, this is a very troubling matter, and we all want what is best for children, and this to us does not seem to be a good way to go about it. And so, when there's this much money involved, who benefits? That's one of the things you learn early on in sociology, whatever. Always look at who benefits.
Who's on the money trail, right?
And this is what's very, very troubling. So, okay.
Let me just close with one thing that I just want to underscore what you said. This is not about developing, and which is part of the superintendent's vision, options in education so that each child is, their learning needs are addressed with a very important learning, creative learning environment. That's not what this is about. This is about a for-profit coming into the Chapel Hill Carrboro school system.
Yeah. And I'm sure that we seem like a ripe plum for the picking to a corporation, you know, because they'll get a lot
more money,
break into our system than they will in some of the. I wonder if they're going into any of these very poor counties. I would be surprised. Anyhow, I'm getting so sad just talking about it. It makes me very sad.
Well, there's work to do.
There's work to do.
Thank you. Join the campaign.
This is an organizer speaking. Yes.
Yeah.
Don't get depressed. Organized.
That's right. I've heard that somewhere before.
Yeah, I've heard it somewhere before too. From you and from Lucy, I think, along with a few other places. Okay, shall we just go out?
I need to toss out one more item that we didn't do. In the station break, and that is to remind people that our underwriter is the Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, right in downtown Chapel Hill. Please go there, stretch your mind with the books you won't find anywhere else, with the forums and the educational events, and you know, maybe the occasional odd poetry reading, and all the other things that they have available as being a very long-standing cultural center for Chapel Hill. And you can find some of the latest information, I assume, on their website, which is internationalistbooks.org.
Okay,
we didn't mention the Nation Discussion Group.
Oh,
this Monday.
Oh my gosh, I can't think.
Wilf is sponsoring a Nation Discussion Group the first Monday of every month, 7 o'clock at our wonderful local Flyleaf Bookstore. So if you are a Nation reader, or you would like to know more about the Nation and have a wonderful group of people talking about great politics and great books, come to Monday.
This Monday,
so 7 o'clock. Well, Flyleaf.
Already next week, we got our whole social calendar filled up. Right.
Right.
There's one thing I wanted to mention, too, which was so glad to hear, a letter to the editor on Wednesday, February 22nd's paper, and the little title is Audacious Admiration. And it starts off, I was disappointed that the Chapel Hill News, which gives excellent coverage to the economic and social challenges facing our community, decided to give a raspberry to the group of audacious folks calling themselves the Carborough Commune, who staged the theatrical takeover of the WCOM building on Saturday, February 4th, serving food, playing music, cleaning up the building, setting up for a dance party, and making plans to create another community-controlled and centered space in Carborough. Please remember that the Weaver Street Market Lawn is private property, where dancing outside of the prescribed times is forbidden, close parenthesis. They welcome passerbys like myself to question authority and to do something positive. Given the recent terrifying overreaction of the Chapel Hill police and civilian authorities to the similar Yates Building action and the brutal violence enacted on nonviolent protesters like Iraq veteran Scott Olson in other quote-unquote progressive places like Berkeley and Oakland, it was a very brave thing to do. To call it childish is to ignore their courage and to erase the fact that every step towards justice in our country's history, as I was recently reminded by Playmakers the Parchment Hour, has been made by young people taking risks to improve things for the rest of us. To me, being grown up, as you suggest they should act, usually means having adjusted to the status quo. But we're facing an increasingly dysfunctional status quo that excludes more and more people. Questioning the transformation of a small, homey corner in North Carolina town into another box store and parking lot may not on its own fix that, but it's asking the right questions and doing something creative about it. I'd give them bread and roses. And this was by Diane M. Nelson of Carborough. And I thought that was a lovely letter because everybody was jumping on them for doing that. And it certainly did. Carborough handled it much, much better than Chapel Hill handled the Yates Building. I must say it was done very, very well, and the young people cooperated very well. But I thought that letter made some excellent points, and I think it's a good theme to go out on, bread and roses. And let's play some music, Dick, and we'll see you all next week. This is Lori Hoyt and Dick Paddock and Miriam Thompson.
Yes, we'll be here next week with Teresa Elamin, reporting on the Commission on the Status of Women annual review.
From the
review.
UN.
Mm-hmm. It's the 55th annual review, by the way.
So good people are still working on that.
Yeah, still trying to do
that. We women need all the help we can get, believe me.
Okay, here's a little Stevie Wonder.
Beautiful. Thank you, Dick.
Yeah, I thought.
If we Dick is trying to find it.
and he will be successful. We hope. And if not Stevie Wonder, maybe something else will come under your finger.
Take
the 117 special from album Faces of the Bass by Lex Volk.
You're listening to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
This is News and Views, a weekly look at the events, policy, and public figures shaping the lives of North Carolinians. And now the director of North Carolina Policy Watch, Chris Fitzsimon.
Coming up next on News and Views, Sarah Ovaska with NC Policy Watch on the potential problems in the rise of charter schools.
This is a really big fundamental change. You know, are we bringing in a for-profit company that's going to be teaching our kids over the computer where the results of that teaching quality are dismal at best?
Jen Jones with the Coalition to Protect NC Families on the fight against the Marriage Discrimination Amendment.
We have the opportunity now to take the lessons learned from other states and apply them here in 2012. When public opinion has clearly shifted towards equality, and say, you know what, we want to stay on the right side of history.
And Christine Muma, director of the NC Center on Actual Innocence, on the need to make sure our criminal justice system gets it right.
Right now we're sitting at 284 DNA exonerations across the country. The DNA cases are important because they contain that conclusive scientific proof that even the biggest skeptics can't argue with.
All that is up next on News and Views. Stay with us.
Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The General Assembly voted last session to lift the cap on the number of charter schools in North Carolina, and the State Board of Education is considering a number of fast-track applications for new schools to open next fall. But is the state ready